Good evening. Welcome to the Just Sleep podcast. I'm Tayshia, your host. Every week, I will read you an old story to help you relax, put the stressful day behind you, and drift off to sleep. Occasionally, we will run ads in order to cover the costs of the production of the podcast. Rest assured, there will be no ads during or after the story. If you prefer an ad-free and intro-free show, you can join Just Sleep Premium. Visit justsleeppodcast.com/support for more information.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tonight, I will be reading Daddy Long Legs by Jean Webster. So lie down, close your eyes, and let me read you a story. Blue Wednesday. The first Wednesday in every month was a perfectly awful day. A day to be awaited with dread, endured with courage, and forgotten with haste. Every floor must be spotless, every chair dustless, and every bed without a wrinkle. 97 squirming little orphans must be scrubbed and combed and buttoned into freshly starched ginghams, and all 97 reminded of their manners and told to say, "Yes, sir," "No, sir," whenever a trustee spoke. It was a distressing time, and poor Jerusha Abbott, being the oldest orphan, had to bear the brunt of it. But this particular first Wednesday, like its predecessors, finally dragged itself to a close. Jerusha escaped from the pantry where she had been making sandwiches for the asylum's guests and turned upstairs to accomplish her regular work. Her special care was room F, where 11 little tots from 4 to 7 occupied 11 little cots set in a row. Jerusha assembled her charges, straightened their rumpled frocks, wiped their noses, and started them in an orderly and willing line towards the dining room to engage themselves for a blessed half hour with bread and milk and prune pudding. Then she dropped down on the window seat and leaned throbbing temples against the cool glass. She had been on her feet since 5 that morning, doing everybody's bidding, scolded and hurried by a nervous matron. Mrs. Lippett, behind the scenes, did not always maintain that calm and pompous dignity with which she faced an audience of trustees and lady visitors. Jerusha gazed out across a broad stretch of frozen lawn, beyond the tall iron paling that marked the confines of the asylum, down undulating ridges sprinkled with country estates, to the spires of the village rising from the midst of bare trees. The day was ended, quite successfully, so far as she knew. The trustees and the visiting committee had made their rounds and read their reports and drunk their tea, and now were hurrying home to their own cheerful firesides to forget their bothersome little charges for another month. Jerusha leaned forward, watching with curiosity and a touch of wistfulness the stream of carriages and automobiles that rolled out at the asylum gates. In imagination, she followed first one equipage, then another, to the big houses dotted along the hillside. She pictured herself in a fur coat and a velvet hat, trimmed with feathers, leaning back in the seat and nonchalantly murmuring, "Home," to the driver. But on the door sill of her home, the picture grew blurred. Jerusha had an imagination, Mrs. Lippett told her, that would get her into trouble if she didn't take care. But keen as it was, it could not carry her beyond the front porch of the houses she would enter. Poor, eager, adventurous little Jerusha, in all her 17 years, had never stepped inside an ordinary house. She could not picture the daily routine of those other human beings who carried on lives undiscommoded by orphans. "Jerusha Abbott, you're wanted in the office, and I think you'd better hurry up." Tommy Dillon, who had joined the choir, came singing up the stairs and down the corridor, his chant growing louder as he approached room F. Jerusha wrenched herself from the window and refaced the troubles of life. "Who wants me?" she cut into Tommy's chant with a note of sharp anxiety. "Mrs. Lippett, in the office, and I think she's mad." "Amen," Tommy piously intoned. But his accent was not entirely malicious. Even the most hardened little orphan felt sympathy for an erring sister who was summoned to the office to face an annoyed matron. And Tommy liked Jerusha, even if she did sometimes jerk him by the arm and nearly scrub his nose off. Jerusha went without comment, but with two parallel lines on her brow. What could have gone wrong, she wondered. Were the sandwiches not thin enough? Were there shells in the nut cakes? Had a lady visitor seen the hole in Susie Hawthorne's stocking? Had, oh horrors. One of the cherubic little babes in her own room F sauced a trustee. The long lower hall had not been lighted, and as she came downstairs, a last trustee stood, on the point of departure, in the open door that led to the porte cochere. Jerusha caught only a fleeting impression of the man, and the impression consisted entirely of tallness. He was waving his arm towards an automobile waiting in the curved drive. As it sprang into motion and approached, head on for an instant, the glaring headlights threw his shadow sharply against the wall inside. The shadow pictured grotesquely elongated legs and arms that ran along the floor and up the wall of the corridor. It looked, for all the world, like a huge, wavering daddy long legs. Jerusha's anxious frown gave place to quick laughter. She was by nature a sunny soul and had always snatched the tiniest excuse to be amused. If one could derive any sort of entertainment out of the oppressive fact of a trustee, it was something unexpected to the good. She advanced to the office quite cheered by the tiny episode and presented a smiling face to Mrs. Lippett. To her surprise, the matron was also, if not exactly smiling, at least appreciably affable. She wore an expression almost as pleasant as the one she donned for visitors. "Sit down, Jerusha. I have something to say to you." Jerusha dropped into the nearest chair and waited with a touch of breathlessness. An automobile flashed past the window. Mrs. Lippett glanced after it. Did you notice the gentleman who has just gone?
I saw his back.
He's one of our most affluential trustees and has given large sums of money towards the asylum support. I am not at liberty to mention his name. He expressly stipulated that he was to remain unknown. Jerusha's eyes widened slightly. She was not accustomed to being summoned to the office to discuss the eccentricities of trustees with a matron. This gentleman has taken an interest in several of our boys. You remember Charles Benton and Henry Freeze? They were both sent through college by this trustee, and both have repaid with hard work and success the money that was so generously expended. Other payment the gentleman does not wish. Heretofore, his philanthropies have been directed solely towards the boys. I have never been able to interest him in the slightest degree in any of the girls in the institution, no matter how deserving. He does not, I may tell you, care for girls. No, ma'am, Jerusha murmured, since some reply seemed to be expected at this point. Today, at the regular meeting, the question of your future was brought up. Mrs. Lippett allowed a moment of silence to fall, then resumed in a slow, placid manner, extremely trying to her hearer's suddenly tightened nerves. Usually, as you know, the children are not kept after they are 16, but an exception was made in your case. You had finished our school at 14, and having done so well in your studies, not always, I must say, in your conduct, it was determined to let you go on in the village high school. Now you're finishing that, and of course the asylum cannot be responsible any longer for your support. As it is, you've had 2 years more than most. Mrs. Lippett overlooked the fact that Jerusha had worked hard for her board during those 2 years, that the convenience of the asylum had come first and her education second, that on days like the present, she was kept at home to scrub. As I say, the question of your future was brought up and your record was discussed, thoroughly discussed. Mrs. Lippett brought accusing eyes to bear upon the prisoner in the dock, and the prisoner looked guilty because it seemed to be expected, not because she could remember any strikingly black pages in her record. Of course, the usual disposition of one in your place would be to put you in a position where you could begin to work. But you've done well in school in certain branches. It seems that your work in English has even been brilliant. Miss Pritchard, who is on our visiting committee, is also on the school board. She has been talking with your rhetoric teacher and made a speech in your favor. She also read aloud an essay that you had written entitled Blue Wednesday. Jerusha's guilty expression this time was not assumed. It seemed to me that you showed little gratitude in holding up to ridicule the institution that has done so much for you. Had you not managed to be funny, I doubt if you would have been forgiven. But fortunately for you, the gentleman who has just gone, appears to have an immoderate sense of humor. On the strength of that impertinent paper, he has offered to send you to college.
To college?
Jerusha's eyes grew big. Mrs. Lippett nodded. He waited to discuss the terms with me. They are unusual. The gentleman, I may say, is erratic. He believes that you have originality, and he is planning to educate you to become a writer.
A writer?
Jerusha's mind was numbed. She could only repeat Mrs. Lippett's words. That is his wish. Whether anything will come of it, the future will show. He's giving you a very liberal allowance, almost, for a girl who has never had any experience in taking care of money, too liberal. But he planned the matter in detail, and I did not feel free to make any suggestions. You are to remain here through the summer, and Miss Pritchard has kindly offered to superintend your outfit. Your board and tuition will be paid directly to the college, and you will receive, in addition, during the 4 years you are there, an allowance of $35 a month. This will enable you to enter on the same standing as the other students. The money will be sent to you by the gentleman's private secretary once a month, and in return, you will write a letter of acknowledgement once a month. That is, you're not to thank him for the money, he doesn't care to have that mentioned, but you are to write a letter telling of the progress in your studies and the details of your daily life. Just such a letter as you would write to your parents if they were living. These letters will be addressed to Mr. John Smith
and will be sent in care of the secretary. The gentleman's name is not John Smith, but he prefers to remain unknown. To you, he will never be anything but John Smith. His reason in requiring the letters is that he thinks nothing so fosters facility in literary expression as letter writing. Since you have no family with whom to correspond, he desires you to write in this way. Also, he wishes to keep track of your progress. He will never answer your letters, nor in the slightest particular take any notice of them. He detests letter writing and does not wish you to become a burden. If any point should ever arise where an answer would seem to be imperative, such as in the event of your being expelled, which I trust will not occur, you may correspond with Mr. Griggs, his secretary. These monthly letters are absolutely obligatory on your part. They're the only payment that Mr. Smith requires, so you must be as punctilious in sending them as though it were a bill that you were paying. I hope that they will always be respectful in tone and will reflect credit on your training. You must remember that you are writing to a trustee of the John Grier Home. Jerusha's eyes longingly sought the door. Her head was in a whirl of excitement, and she wished only to escape from Mrs. Lippett's platitudes and think. She rose and took a tentative step backwards. Mrs. Lippett detained her with a gesture. It was an oratorical opportunity not to be slighted. I trust that you are properly grateful for this very rare good fortune that has befallen you. Not many girls in your position ever have an opportunity to rise in the world. You must always remember. Yes, ma'am, thank you. I think if that's all, I must go and sew a patch on Freddie Perkins' trousers. The door closed behind her, and Mrs. Lippett watched it with a dropped jaw, her peroration in midair. The Letters of Miss Jerusha Abbott to Mr. Daddy Longlegs Smith, 215 Ferguson Hall, 24th September. Dear kind trustee who sends orphans to college, here I am. I travelled yesterday for 4 hours in a train. It's a funny sensation, isn't it? I never rode in one before. College is the biggest, most bewildering place. I get lost whenever I leave my room. I will write you a description later when I'm feeling less muddled. Also, I will tell you about my lessons. Classes don't begin until Monday morning, and this is Saturday night. But I wanted to write a letter first, just to get acquainted. It seems strange to be writing letters to somebody you don't know. It seems strange for me to be writing letters at all. I've never written more than 3 or 4 in my life. So please overlook it if these are not a model kind. Before leaving yesterday morning, Mrs. Lippett and I had a very serious talk. She told me how to behave all the rest of my life, and especially how to behave towards the kind gentleman who is doing so much for me. I must take care to be very respectful. But how can one be respectful to a person who wishes to be called John Smith? Why couldn't you have picked out a name with a little personality? I might as well write letters to Dare Hitching Post or Dare Clothes Prop. I've been thinking about you a great deal this summer. Having somebody take an interest in me after all these years makes me feel as though I had found a sort of family. It seems as though I belong to somebody now, and it's a very comfortable sensation. I must say, however, that when I think about you, my imagination has very little to work upon. There are just 3 things that I know. 1, you are tall. 2, you are rich. 3, you hate girls. I suppose I might call you, dear Mr. Girl Hater, only that's rather insulting to me. Or dear Mr. Rich Man, but that's insulting to you, as though money were the only important thing about you. Besides, being rich is such a very external quality. Maybe you won't stay rich all your life. Lots of very clever men get smashed up in Wall Street. But at least you will stay tall all your life. So I've decided to call you Dear Daddy Longlegs. I hope you won't mind. It's just a private pet name. We won't tell Mrs. Lippett. The 10 o'clock bell is going to ring in 2 minutes. Our day is divided into sections by bells. We eat and sleep and study by bells. It's very enlivening. I feel like a fire horse all the time. There it goes. Lights out. Good night. Observe with what precision I obey rules due to my training in the John Grier Home. Yours most respectfully, Jerusha Abbott. To Mr. Daddy Longlegs Smith, 1st October. Dear Daddy Longlegs, I love college, and I love you for sending me. I'm very, very happy, and so excited every moment of the time that I can scarcely sleep. You can't imagine how different it is from the John Grier home. I never dreamed there was such a place in the world. I'm feeling sorry for everybody who isn't a girl and who can't come here. I'm sure the college you attended when you were a boy couldn't have been so nice. My room is up in a tower that used to be the contagious ward before they built the new infirmary. There are three other girls on the same floor of the tower. A senior who wears spectacles and is always asking us please to be a little more quiet. And two freshmen named Sally McBride and Julia Rutledge Pendleton. Sally has red hair and a turn-up nose and is quite friendly. Julia comes from one of the first families in New York and hasn't noticed me yet. They room together, and the senior and I have singles. Usually freshmen can't get singles, they're very scarce, but I got one without even asking. I suppose the registrar didn't think it would be right to ask a properly brought-up girl to room with a foundling. You see, there are advantages. My room is on the northwest corner with two windows and a view. After you've lived in a ward for 18 years with 20 roommates, it is restful to be alone. This is the first chance I've ever had to get acquainted with Jerusha Abbott. I think I'm going to like her. Do you think you are? Tuesday. They are organizing the freshman basketball team and there's a chance that I shall get in it. I'm little, of course, but terribly quick and wiry and tough. While the others are hopping about in the air, I can dodge under their feet and grab the ball. It's loads of fun practicing, out in the athletic field in the afternoon, with all the trees, all red and yellow, and the air full of the smell of burning leaves, and everybody laughing and shouting. These are the happiest girls I ever saw, and I am the happiest of all. I meant to write a long letter and tell you all the things I'm learning. Mrs. Lippitt said you wanted to know, but seventh hour has just rung, and in 10 minutes I'm due at the athletic field in gymnasium clothes. Don't you hope I'll get in the team? Yours always, Jerusha Abbott. P.S. 9 o'clock. Sally McBride just poked her head in at my door. This is what she said. I'm so homesick that I simply can't stand it. Do you feel that way? I smiled a little and said no, I thought I could pull through. At least homesickness is one disease that I've escaped. I never heard of anybody being asylum sick, did you? 10th October. Dear Daddy Longlegs, did you ever hear of Michelangelo? He was a famous artist who lived in Italy in the Middle Ages. Everybody in English literature seemed to know about him, and the whole class laughed because I thought he was an archangel. He sounds like an archangel, doesn't he? The trouble with college is that you are expected to know such a lot of things you've never learned. It's very embarrassing at times. But now, when the girls talk about things that I've never heard of, I just keep still and look them up in the encyclopedia. I made an awful mistake the first day. Somebody mentioned Maurice Maeterlinck, and I asked if she was a freshman. That joke has gone all over college. But anyway, I'm just as bright in class as any of the others, and brighter than some of them. Do you care to know how I've furnished my room? It's a symphony in brown and yellow. The wall was tinted buff, and I've bought yellow denim curtains and cushions and a mahogany desk, secondhand for $3, and a rattan chair and a brown rug with an ink spot in the middle. I stand the chair over the spot. The windows are up high. You can't look out from an ordinary seat. But I unscrewed the looking glass from the back of the bureau, upholstered the top, and moved it up against the window. It's just the right height for a window seat. You pull out the drawers like steps and walk up. Very comfortable. Sally McBride helped me choose the things at the senior auction. She's lived in a house all her life and knows about furnishing. You can't imagine what fun it is to shop and pay with a real $5 bill and get some change when you've never had more than a few cents in your life. I assure you, I do appreciate that allowance. Sally is the most entertaining person in the world, and Julia Rutledge Pendleton the least so. It's strange what a mixture the registrar can make in the matter of roommates. Sally thinks everything is funny, even flunking, and Julia is bored at everything. She never makes the slightest effort to be amiable. She believes that if you are a Pendleton, that fact alone admits you to heaven without any further examination. Julia and I were born to be enemies. And now, I suppose you've been waiting very impatiently to hear what I'm learning. 1. Latin, Second Punic War. Hannibal and his forces pitched camp at Lake Trasimenus last night. They prepared an ambuscade for the Romans, and a battle took place at the fourth watch this morning. Romans in retreat. 2. French, 24 pages of the Three Musketeers and Third Conjugation, irregular verbs. 3. Geometry, finished cylinders, now doing cones. 4. English, studying exposition. My style improves daily in clearness and brevity. 5. Physiology. Reached the digestive system, bile in the pancreas next time. Yours on the way to being educated, Jerusha Abbott. P.S. I hope you never touch alcohol. It does dreadful things to your liver. Wednesday. Dear Daddy Longlegs, I've changed my name. I'm still Jerusha in the catalogue, but I'm Judy everywhere else. It's really too bad, isn't it, to have to give yourself the only pet name you ever had? I didn't quite make up the Judy, though. That's what Freddie Perkins used to call me before he could speak plainly. I wish Mrs. Lippitt would use a little more ingenuity about choosing babies' names. She gets the last names out of the telephone book. You'll find Abbott on the first page. And she picks the Christian names up anywhere. She got Jerusha from a tombstone. I've always hated it. But I rather like Judy. It's such a silly name. It belongs to the kind of girl I'm not. A sweet little blue-eyed thing, petted and spoiled by all the family, who romps her way through life without any cares. Wouldn't it be nice to be like that? Whatever faults I may have, no one can ever accuse me of having been spoiled by my family. But it's great fun to pretend I've been. In the future, please always address me as Judy. Do you want to know something? I have 3 pairs of kid gloves. I had kid mittens before from the Christmas tree, but never real kid gloves with 5 fingers. I take them out and try them on every little while. It's all I can do not to wear them to classes. Dinner bell. Goodbye. Friday. What do you think? The English instructor said that my last paper shows an unusual amount of originality. She did, truly. Those were her words. It doesn't seem possible, does it, considering the 18 years of training that I've had? The aim of the John Grier Home, as you doubtless know and heartily approve of, is to turn the 97 orphans into 97 twins. The unusual artistic ability which I exhibit was developed at an early age through drawing chalk pictures of Mrs. Lippitt on the woodshed door. I hope that I don't hurt your feelings when I criticize the home of my youth. But you have the upper hand, you know, for if I become too impertinent, you can always stop payment of your checks. That isn't a very polite thing to say. But you can't expect me to have any manners. A foundling asylum isn't a young lady's finishing school. You know, it isn't the work that is going to be hard in college. It's the play. Half the time I don't know what the girls are talking about. Their jokes seem to relate to a past that everyone but me has shared. I'm a foreigner in the world and I don't understand the language. It's a miserable feeling. I've had it all my life. At the high school, the girls would stand in groups and just look at me. I was strange and different and everybody knew it. I could feel John Grier Home written on my face. And then a few charitable ones would make a point of coming up and saying something polite. I hated every one of them. The charitable ones most of all. Nobody here knows that I was brought up in an asylum. I told Sally McBride that my mother and father were dead and that a kind old gentleman was sending me to college, which is entirely true so far as it goes. I don't want you to think that I'm a coward, but I do want to be like the other girls. And that dreadful home looming over my childhood is the one great big difference. If I can turn my back on that and shut out the remembrance, I think, I might be just as desirable as any other girl. I don't think there's any real underneath difference, do you? Anyway, Sally McBride likes me. Yours ever, Judy Abbott. Nay, Jerusha. Saturday morning. I've just been reading this letter over and it sounds pretty uncheerful. But can't you guess that I have a special topic due Monday morning and a review in geometry and a very sneezy cold? Sunday. I forgot to post this yesterday, so I will add an indignant postscript. We had a bishop this morning, and what do you think he said? The most beneficent promise made us in the Bible is this, the poor ye have always with you. They were put here in order to keep us charitable. The poor, please observe, being a sort of useful domestic animal. If I hadn't grown into such a perfect lady, I should have gone up after service and told him what I thought. 25th October. Dear Daddy Longlegs, I'm in the basketball team, and you ought to see the bruise on my left shoulder. It's blue and mahogany with little streaks of orange. Julia Pendleton tried for the team, but she didn't get in. Hooray. You see what a mean disposition I have. College gets nicer and nicer. I like the girls and the teachers and the classes and the campus and the things to eat. We have ice cream twice a week, and we never have cornmeal mush. You only wanted to hear from me once a month, didn't you? And I've been peppering you with letters every few days. But I'm so excited about all these new adventures that I must talk to somebody. And you're the only one I know. Please excuse my exuberance. I'll settle pretty soon. If my letters bore you, you can always toss them into the wastebasket. I promise not to write another till the middle of November. Yours most loquaciously, Judy Abbott. Dear Daddy Longlegs, listen to what I've learned today. The area of the convex surface of the frustum of a regular pyramid is half the product of the sum of the parameters of its bases by the altitude of either of its trapezoids. It doesn't sound true, but it is. I can prove it. You've never heard about my clothes, have you? 6 dresses, all new and beautiful and bought for me, not handed down from somebody bigger. Perhaps you don't realize what a climax that marks in the career of an orphan. You gave them to me, and I am very, very, very much obliged. It's a fine thing to be educated, but nothing compared to the dizzying experience of owning 6 new dresses. Miss Pritchard, who's on the visiting committee, picked them out, not Mrs. Lippitt, thank goodness. I have an evening dress, pink mull over silk. I'm perfectly beautiful in that. And a blue church dress, and a dinner dress of red veiling with trimming, and another rose-coloured chalice, and a grey street suit, and an everyday dress for classes. That wouldn't be an awfully big wardrobe for Julia Rutledge Pendleton, but for Jerusha Abbott. Oh my. I suppose you're now thinking what a frivolous, shallow little beast she is, and what a waste of money to educate a girl. But if you've been dressed in checked ginghams all your life, you'd appreciate how I feel. And when I started to the high school, I entered even another period even worse than the checked ginghams, the poor box. You can't know how I dreaded appearing in school in those miserable poor box dresses. I was perfectly sure to be put down in class next to the girl who first owned my dress, and she would whisper and giggle and point it out to the others. The bitterness of wearing your enemy's cast-off clothes eats into your soul. If I wore silk stockings for the rest of my life, I don't believe I could obliterate the scar. Latest War Bulletin. News from the scene of action. At the fourth watch on Thursday, the 13th of November, Hannibal routed the advance guard of the Romans and led the Carthaginian forces over the mountains into the plains of Casilinum. A cohort of light-armed Numidians engaged the infantry of Quintus Fabius Maximus. 2 battles and light skirmishing, Romans repulsed with heavy losses. I have the honor of being your special correspondent from the front, J. Abbott. P.S. I know I'm not to expect any letters in return, and I've been warned not to bother you with questions, but tell me, just this once, are you awfully old or just a little old? And are you perfectly bald or just a little bald. It is very difficult thinking about you in the abstract like a theorem in geometry. Given a tall, rich man who hates girls, but is very generous to one quite impertinent girl, what does he look like? RSVP. 19th December. Dear Daddy Longlegs, you never answered my question, and it was very important. Are you bald? I have it planned exactly what you look like, very satisfactorily, until I reach the top of your head, and then I am stuck. I can't decide whether you have white hair or black hair, or sort of sprinkly grey hair, or maybe none at all. Here's your portrait. But the problem is, shall I add some hair? Would you like to know what colour your eyes are? They're grey. And your eyebrows stick out like a porch roof. Beetling, they're called in novels. And your mouth is a straight line with a tendency to turn down at the corners. Oh, you see, I know. You're a snappy old thing with a temper. Chapel Bell. 9:45 p.m. I have a new unbreakable rule. Never, never to study at night, no matter how many written reviews are coming in the morning. Instead, I read just plain books. I have to, you know, because they're 18 blank years behind me. You wouldn't believe me what an abyss of ignorance my mind is. I'm just realizing the depths myself. The things that most girls with a properly assorted family and a home and friends and a library know by absorption, I've never heard of. For example, I never read Mother Goose or David Copperfield or Ivanhoe or Cinderella or Bluebeard or Robinson Crusoe or Jane Eyre or Alice in Wonderland or a word of Kipling. I didn't know that Henry VIII was married more than once or that Shelley was a poet. I didn't know that people used to be monkeys and that the Garden of Eden was a beautiful myth. I didn't know that RLS stood for Robert Louis Stevenson or that George Eliot was a lady. I had never seen a picture of the Mona Lisa and, it's true, but you won't believe it, I had never heard of Sherlock Holmes. Now, I know all of these things and a lot of others besides, but you can see how much I need to catch up. And oh, but it's fun. I look forward all day to evening, and then I put an engaged on the door and get into my nice red bathrobe and furry slippers and pile all the cushions behind me on the couch and light the brass student lamp at my elbow and read and read and read. One book isn't enough. I have four going at once. Just now they're Tennyson's Poems and Vanity Fair and Kipling's Plain Tales and, don't laugh, Little Women. I find that I'm the only girl in college who wasn't brought up on Little Women. I haven't told anybody, though. That would stamp me as strange. I just quietly went and bought it with $1.12 of my last month's allowance, and the next time somebody mentions pickled limes, I'll know what she's talking about. 10 o'clock. This is a very interrupted letter. Saturday. Sir, I have the honour to report fresh explorations in the field of geometry. On Friday last, we abandoned our former works in parallelepipeds and proceeded to truncated prisms. We are finding the road rough and very uphill. Sunday. The Christmas holidays begin next week and the trunks are up. The corridors are so filled up that you can hardly get through, and everybody is so bubbling over with excitement that studying is getting left out. I'm going to have a beautiful time in vacation. There's another freshman who lives in Texas staying behind, and we are planning to take long walks, and if there's any ice, learn to skate. Then, there's still the whole library to be read and 3 empty weeks to do it in. Goodbye. I hope that you are feeling as happy as I am. Yours ever, Judy. P.S. Don't forget to answer my question. If you don't want the trouble of writing, have your secretary telegraph. He can just say, Mr. Smith is quite bald, or Mr. Smith is not bald, or Mr. Smith has white hair. And you can deduct the 25 cents out of my allowance. Goodbye till January, and Merry Christmas. Towards the end of the Christmas vacation, exact date unknown. Dear Daddy Longlegs, is it snowing where you are? All the world that I see from my tower is draped in white, and the flakes are coming down as big as popcorns. It's late afternoon. The sun is just setting, a cold yellow color, behind some colder violet hills. And I am up in my window seat, using the last light to write to you. Your 5 gold pieces were a surprise. I'm not used to receiving Christmas presents. You've already given me such lots of things, everything I have, you know, that I don't quite feel that I deserve extras, but I quite like them just the same. Do you want to know what I bought with my money? 1. A silver watch in a leather case to wear on my wrist and to get me to recitations in time. 2. Matthew Arnold's poems. 3. A hot water bottle. 4. A steamer rug. My tower is cold. 5. 500 sheets of yellow manuscript paper. I'm going to commence being an author pretty soon. 6. A dictionary of synonyms to enlarge the author's vocabulary. 7. I don't much like to confess this last item, but I will. A pair of silk stockings. And now, never say I don't tell all. It was a very low motive, if you must know it, that prompted the silk stockings. Julia Pendleton comes into my room to do geometry, and she sits cross-legged on the couch and wears silk stockings every night. But just wait. As soon as she gets back from vacation, I shall go in and sit on her couch in my silk stockings. You see, the miserable creature that I am, but at least I'm honest. And you knew already from my asylum record that I wasn't perfect, didn't you? To recapitulate, that's the way the English instructor begins every other sentence. I'm very much obliged for my 7 presents. I'm pretending to myself that they came in a box from my family in California. The watches from father, the rug from mother, the hot water bottle from grandmother, who is always worrying for fear I shall catch cold in this climate, and the yellow paper from my little brother Harry. My sister Isabel gave me the silk stockings, and Aunt Susan the Matthew Arnold poems. Uncle Harry, little Harry is named after him, gave me the dictionary. He wanted to send chocolates, but I insisted on synonyms. You don't object, do you, to playing the part of a composite family? And now, shall I tell you about my vacation, or are you only interested in my education as such? I hope you appreciate the delicate shade of meaning in as such. It is the latest addition to my vocabulary. The girl from Texas is named Leonora Fenton. Almost as funny as Jerusha, isn't it? I like her, but not so much as Sally McBride. I shall never like anyone so much as Sally. Except you. I must always like you the best of all, because you're my whole family rolled into one. Leonora and I, and 2 sophomores, have walked cross-country every pleasant day and explored the whole neighborhood, dressed in short skirts and knit jackets and caps, and carrying shiny sticks to whack things with. Once we walked into town, 4 miles, and stopped at a restaurant where the college girls go for dinner. Broiled lobster, 35 cents, and for dessert, buckwheat cakes and maple syrup, 15 cents. Nourishing and cheap. It was such a lark, especially for me because it was so awfully different from the asylum. I feel like an escaped convict every time I leave the campus. Before I thought, I started to tell the others what an experience I was having. The cat was almost out of the bag when I grabbed it by its tail and pulled it back in. It's awfully hard for me not to tell everything I know. I'm a very confiding soul by nature. If I didn't have you to tell things to, I'd burst. We had a molasses candy pull last Friday evening, given by the house matron of Ferguson to the left behinds in the other halls. There were 22 of us altogether. Freshmen and sophomores and juniors and seniors, all united in amicable accord. The kitchen is huge, with copper pots and kettles hanging in rows on the stone wall. The littlest casserole among them, about the size of a wash boiler. 400 girls live in Ferguson. The chef, in a white cap and apron, fetched out 22 other white caps and aprons. I can't imagine where he got so many. And we all turned ourselves into cooks. It was great fun, though I've seen better candy. When it was finally finished, and ourselves in the kitchen and the doorknobs all thoroughly sticky, we organized a procession, and still in our caps and aprons, each carrying a big fork or spoon or frying pan. We marched through the empty corridors to the officer's parlor, where half a dozen professors and instructors were passing a tranquil evening. We serenaded them with college songs and offered refreshments. They accepted politely, but dubiously. We left them some sucking chunks of molasses candy, sticky and speechless. Do you see? My education progresses. Don't you really think that I ought to be an artist instead of an author? Vacation will be over in 2 days and I shall be glad to see the girls again. My tower is just a trifle lonely when 9 people occupy a house that was built for 400. They do rattle about a bit. 11 pages. You must be so tired. I meant this to be just a short little thank you note, but when I get started, I seem to have a ready pen. Goodbye, and I thank you for thinking of me. I should be perfectly happy except for one little threatening cloud on the horizon. Examinations come in February. Yours with love, Judy. P.S. Maybe it isn't proper to send love. If it isn't, please excuse, but I must love somebody, and there's only you and Mrs. Lippett to choose between. So you see, you'll have to put up with it, because I can't love her. On the eve. Dear Daddy Longlegs, you should see the way this college is studying. We've forgotten we ever had a vacation. 57 irregular verbs have I introduced to my brain in the past 4 days. I'm only hoping they'll stay till after examinations. Some of the girls sell their textbooks when they're through with them, and I intend to keep mine. Then after I've graduated, I shall have my whole education in a row in the bookcase, and when I need to use any detail, I can turn to it without the slightest hesitation. So much easier and more accurate than trying to keep it in your head. Julia Pendleton dropped in this evening to pay a social call and stayed a solid hour. She got started on the subject of family, and I couldn't switch her off. She wanted to know what my mother's maiden name was. Did you ever hear such an impertinent question to ask of a person from a foundling asylum? I didn't have the courage to say I didn't know, so I just miserably plumped on the first name I could think of, and that was Montgomery. Then she wanted to know whether I belonged to the Massachusetts Montgomerys or the Virginia Montgomerys. Her mother was a Rutherford. The family came over in the Ark and were connected by marriage with Henry VIII. On her father's side, they date back further than Adam. On the topmost branches of her family tree, there's a superior breed of monkeys with very fine silky hair and extra long tails. I meant to write you a nice, cheerful, entertaining letter tonight, but I'm too sleepy and scared. The freshman's lot is not a happy one. Yours, about to be examined, Judy Abbott. Sunday. Dearest Daddy Longlegs, I have some awful, awful, awful news to tell you. But I won't begin with it. I'll try to get you in a good humor first. Jerusha Abbott has commenced to be an author. A poem entitled From My Tower appears in the February monthly on the first page, which is a very great honor for a freshman. My English instructor stopped me on the way out from chapel last night and said it was a charming piece of work, except for the 6th line, which had too many feet. I shall send you a copy in case you care to read it. Let me see if I can't think of something else pleasant. Oh yes, I'm learning to skate and can glide about quite respectably all by myself. Also, I've learned how to slide down a rope from the roof of the gymnasium, and I can vault a bar 3 feet and 6 inches high. I hope shortly to pull up to 4 feet. We had a very interesting sermon this morning, preached by the Bishop of Alabama. His text was, "Judge not that ye be not judged." It was about the necessity of overlooking mistakes in others and not discouraging people by harsh judgments. I wish you might have heard it. This is the sunniest, most blinding winter afternoon with icicles dripping from the fir trees and all the world bending under a weight of snow, except me. And I'm bending under a weight of sorrow. Now for the news. Courage, Judy, you must tell. Are you surely in a good humor? I failed in mathematics and Latin prose. I'm tutoring in them and will take another examination next month. I'm sorry if you're disappointed. But otherwise, I don't care a bit, because I've learned such a lot of things not mentioned in the catalogue. I've read 17 novels and bushels of poetry. Really necessary novels like Vanity Fair and Richard Feverel and Alice in Wonderland. also Emerson's essays in Lockhart's Life of Scott, and the first volume of Gibbon's Roman Empire, and half of Benvenuto Cellini's Life. Wasn't he entertaining? He used to saunter out and casually kill a man before breakfast. So you see, I'm much more intelligent than if I'd just stuck to Latin. Will you forgive me this once, if I promise never to fail again? Yours in sackcloth, Judy. Dear Daddy Longlegs, this is an extra letter in the middle of the month because I'm rather lonely tonight. It's awfully stormy. All the lights are out on the campus, but I drank black coffee and I can't go to sleep. I had a supper party this evening consisting of Sally and Julia and Leonora Fenton, and sardines and toasted muffins and salad and fudge and coffee. Julia said she'd had a good time, but Sally stayed to help wash the dishes. I might very usefully put some time on Latin tonight, but there's no doubt about it. I'm a very languid Latin scholar. We finished Livy and De Senectute and are now engaged with De Amicetia, pronounced Dam and Setia. Should you mind, just for a little while, pretending you were my grandmother? Sally has one and Julia and Leonora each two, and they were all comparing them tonight. I can't think of anything I'd rather have in such a respectable relationship. So if you really don't object. When I went into town yesterday, I saw the sweetest cap of Cluny lace trimmed with lavender ribbon. I'm going to make you a present of it on your 83rd birthday. That's the clock in the chapel tower striking 12. I believe I'm sleepy, after all. Good night, Granny. I love you dearly. Judy. Good night.